This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Sanebox, where inbox zero is just one click away.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of The Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average and the S&P both closed lower for the week. The NASDAQ a touch higher. The Russell 2000 lagging for the year in a tight consolidation. Snap is snapped. The banger pattern. The robo ripoff. All this and much more on episode number 509 of The Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hello there, Andrew Horowitz, and this is The Disciplined Investor, and I am your host of this show, as well as the co-host of DH Unplugged each and every week. On Sundays, you'll hear The Disciplined Investor, and of course, on Tuesday evenings, we're live at 9 o'clock with John C. Dvorak, myself, talking about all things in the crazy world of finance, a little bit of a different track we take on that particular show, but you must listen to that. It's a fun show. We do have a lot to talk about. There's been so much interest in this Investology offering that we are about to put out, and I want to kind of give you a quick update of what's going on with that because a lot of people have been writing in about that. You remember a few weeks ago we talked about that we were looking for beta testers, people to check it out and see what's going on to make sure that, well, we have everything right. And, you know, there's been people since then saying, well, what's this all about? So I thought I'd give you a quick down and dirty and mention that next week we are going to dedicate a show to all of this, the whole idea of this robo-advising ripoff and how this is so much different and better. Because this is, I would say, kind of the antithesis, the anti-robo for investors that, well, are smart and want to see technology combined with some real core and solid and advanced investment management that has human oversight. Essentially, we take the best of the whole idea of what robo technology offers and make it, well, more than just a simple asset grab to get assets in our proprietary ETFs. You know, what's funny is that for so many years, we have been talking about with our clients that we don't want to have proprietary instruments inside of a portfolio because usually what's happened with those, especially years ago, was that people were suckered into giving their assets to a big brokerage house. Pick your name, the ABC brokerage house, and you would get the ABC Growth Mutual Fund, the ABC Healthcare Fund. And what would happen is that there was more money paid to the advisors and it was good for the house. And it really wasn't a good idea. But because there was a better financial, compensation plan for those that were, quote, selling it or advising you on it, it was easy for them. And of course, the firms were well behind this, desirous of gathering assets into their particular funds and usually charging you a higher price. And here we are years later, and everybody is coming out with these robo-advising, very plain vanilla, relatively inexpensive platforms that give you what? Proprietary ETFs. Now, ETFs, they're designed differently. They're much different than the mutual funds from years past, but there's still many of them are basically just another asset grab for the brokerage houses. Why are they doing ETFs? It's easy. There's really not a lot of work to be done in choosing the assets of an ETF because the ones that they're choosing and creating for these programs are generally just mimics of various indices. Now, that may be good for certain asset classes and sectors, but I'm not sure that's really good for... let me say this. It's not the best that you can do for your portfolio. So when we created this, we kind of came up with, okay, what would we do if we were to use the baseline platform of the robo technology for client access and for developing the portfolio and using technology in its greatest form to assist. And what we came up with is something we call advisor-crafted and technology-enhanced portfolio management. That's what Investology is. So in stage one of the beta test, we have people right now involved letting us know about how it is structured in terms of the site that we have designed for it. And basic things like colors and text and information and FAQs and all that. We're about to enter probably in the next week or maybe the second week after the second part, second stage of the beta test, which is the back end. And beta testers will have the chance to create their portfolios using our risk profiling tools, activate accounts, invest in the appropriate portfolios, access their portfolios and reports and rebalance and all the good things that are available. But one of the things that we have that is much different is a much greater selection of investments that are much more appropriate. So what we did is we took our, I don't want to give all this away, we'll talk about it next week more, but we took all of the work that we do for our global allocations and simplified it a bit, changed a few things, but still the thesis that we have on how we create portfolios working together now in a different way because we have the technology that helps us to allocate a little differently and work with the client a little bit differently. Again, there is differences. But we were able to bring it down to about $10,000 approximately. We're still working on the fine detail of what the minimum will be for entry into the program. Whereas our global allocations, again, it's much different. With that, we do some tax planning, estate planning. We do a lot more things involved with clients, but there's a $500,000 minimum. So the question was, how are we going to bring this down to the level where we can actually work with this in a way that is, that is workable at a much lower level, much lower entry level, and still give an extremely robust experience? We'll talk more about this next week. This is something you really need to tune in for. We're going to have Kevin Hoffman here, and we'll talk about this whole thing. What's going to happen once everything goes through the beta system and stage one, stage two, and we check it out and you get to see what's going on. If you want to see, in the meantime, a little taste of it, go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Scroll down, you'll see Investology. Click on that. It'll give you a bunch of details of what's going on there. Before we get to some of the things I want to talk about with regard to Straight Path Communications and Snap and some of the things which are going on in the economic arena, I want to just call your attention to our sponsor, which is Sanebox. Many of you have written in that you've had a really good experience with Sanebox because you're just fed up with all this crap email in your email box, clogging it up, making your life miserable, making you have to check if it's a real email, if it's spam, if it's a spoof, if it's just something that's important or not. And wading through all that is very difficult. Well, Sanebox makes it really easy. You get to something that everybody, this nirvana of inbox zero that everybody talks about in life, but really Sanebox, what they do is they sort through your email and move all the trivial stuff, all the spam and the junk and all that into a different folder. So only the messages in your inbox are the ones that you really need to see. So aside from simply just being just a spam filter, they have a lot of different features that are really interesting. One of them is this great idea they came up with called the black hole, where you move a message from a sender into that particular folder and you never hear from that sender again, unless you want to, for whatever reason. But here's the thing. You can go visit them and check out all the great features that are available and how it's going to make your life so much better over at Sanebox.com/TDI. Sanebox.com/TDI. And they're going to throw in an extra $20 as a credit on top of the two-week trial where when you sign up for that, you don't have to actually put in a credit card or anything. You just check it out totally and see if you like it, see what's going on. Sanebox.com/TDI. Make sure you do that because I think you'll really like what you're going to find. Now, if you're listening to DH Unplugged last week, I had talked about what I thought would be probably the short of the century, at least an easy picking, because there was something going on in the markets that I found very, well, very strange. It was about a company called Straight Path Communications, STRP, Straight Path Communications. Here's what happened. I tweeted this. I talked about it on DH Unplugged. As a matter of fact, it was a weekly stock pick that I picked for DH Unplugged as well. This is a 5G spectrum type of company. It's a technology company that deals with cellular transmission. And there was a lot of short sellers that were out there for a while in the stock. It was down in the 40s. And all of a sudden, AT&T came in and they were looking to buy the company. Stock shot up to like $100 per share. And this was only a couple of weeks ago. Maybe 2 weeks ago, this company was at 40 and then it shot up to 100. And AT&T was going to buy it. And then somehow, somewhere, another bidder came in. It was a mystery bidder by every stretch. The only thing we knew was that it was a, quote, multinational telecommunications company. And then we're bidding above AT&T. And all we knew was that it came in at $136. Now this, so just to track this back, we start out at 40. Okay, we start out at 40 bucks. We're now at like 100 and change. Now we have this mystery bidder that's topping AT&T's bid at 136. Stock's moving up. People are getting crazy. The shorts are getting squeezed like never. They just want out. They don't want to deal with this anymore. It goes back and forth, and now we see this mystery bidder once again has a superior bid at 184. And the company, that being Straight Path, said that was an acceptable bid, a superior bid, one that they are looking to possibly accept. Now the stock goes to not 184, but like 200, 210, 215, 226. Now from everything that I saw in terms of valuation, enterprise value, what the company was offering, how this went from a level of $40 a share and it kind of kept on creeping higher and moving higher, it seemed unlikely to me that the company would not take this $184 bid. And also it seemed very unlikely that anybody was going to come in a lot higher. Now we knew at that point on Monday or Tuesday of last week that there's about 3 days until they had to give an answer, 3 business days, until they had to give an answer to whether or not the company's going to accept the superior bid. So they sort of put the enterprise value at about $3.1 billion. Again, think about that, from $40 a share up to about $184. The big question was, who was the mystery bidder? How deep were their pockets? We thought it was probably Verizon, which actually, I'll give it away right now, that it was Verizon in the end. Big question also was, why was the stock trading at 226? This was key. What was going on? There was some people talking about on Twitter that this thing's going to 400. Totally crazy. Well, what do we do? One of the suggestions we made on DH Unplugged, what seemed very logical at the time, was this was a great short candidate. I talked about this on Tuesday night. Time was running out to accept and, you know, do anything different on this $184 bid. It was probably very likely that this would happen. And let me give you the actual result. What happened was that on Thursday, the company accepted the superior bid from the mystery bidder, which did turn out to be Verizon. The stock came down to about 178, below the 184. This is usually a case where there's going to be a buyout. The stock will trade a little bit lower, giving it some wiggle room for maybe the potential for a company to back out, something to go on. Maybe there'll be some kind of investigation and period where there may be some question as to whether or not it's going to be a monopoly or not. And you got to look at all the different rules that are going on. So there's always a little bit of wiggle room before the deal is finally done and finally closed. So what we thought what we would do is, wow, this would be great. You know, this was the idea. This was going to happen. We actually targeted about 177 what the stock would come down to. It was a great short, actually up. The short was up 23% from Wednesday's open. We also talked about how it would be a good idea to play this on the option side. And here's what you could have done. Now, this is just a little lesson because it's happened already. This is not something in the future. But again, this is something you could have done. The idea was that if the offer of $184 was accepted, we thought that probably would come down to about $177. You could have bought the May 19 put options with 190 strike for about $3.70 on Tuesday. There's enough room to assume that if they accepted the $184 price, that it would fall by the end of the week below 180, right? That was the idea behind this. That would price the option somewhere above $10. That was the estimate that we figured before this happened. It actually opened on Thursday morning at $12. So you bought it at $370. Now you can sell it at about $12, which is about a 225% gain in 3 days. Here's the bottom line. That on this deal, if you really think about it, the risk reward for this for investors was, as people were getting crazy, giddy, and out of control, emotionally charged about this, thinking this is going to go up to 400 from 40 in a matter of days, that some company would pay, I guess that would have been $6.5 or $7 billion for a company that was worth less than a billion, significantly less than a billion, or I guess it was about a billion beforehand. Without any significant amount of earnings, revenues, this was just a buy to position Verizon in the 5G channel. Now, what you want to do in the future is look for these kind of parabolic moves that are based on just emotions, you know, just a gut feeling and stocks moving up because of a high short interest. And the emotions are driving the stock rather than the facts. Be disciplined and find these things. Watch the price moves. I'm not talking about just a 2% or 4% or 8% move on maybe post earnings like you see sometimes. I'm talking about on an announcement, things getting a little bit crazy. If you want to find out more about the weekly stock picks, how we did this, also go over to dhunplug.com. You can also listen in weekly on Tuesdays, as I mentioned, at 9 o'clock live or download it on your favorite podcasting app. But this was a great risk reward setup that was, it seemed almost too good to be true at the time. And it played out pretty well. If you find any of these, if you have any questions about something like this, let me know about it. Let's take a look. You can simply go to the Ask Andrew section on the disciplinedinvestor.com website and send me your question. And right after we get through this, I'm gonna actually get to some listener questions. We have a few just sitting right here. And I guess we gotta talk about some of these levered ETFs as well. It's astounding of what's going on right now. What was just approved? It's amazing that this actually is being allowed to be used as an investment. We'll get to that too. Let's get to some listener questions. First up is from Andrew R. And Andrew writes that, first of all, I've been listening to the show for about a year and absolutely love it. I even got the partner at my accounting firm to start listening and he's a fan as well. Woo, go Andrew. Andrew R, that is, not me. That being said, I've been saving up money to start investing on my own and have been reading about and studying up on a number of companies by looking at their fundamentals and using my accounting knowledge to understand their financial health. To be honest, though, it really seems like the market is just off its rocker right now, and I'm not really sure of where to enter. Can you advise on any sectors that seem relatively consistent even in the midst of this politically driven, social driven craziness? Andrew, I think you have some very valid points here. And I think that we are definitely in the midst of something different, but a bull market is just that. It will last as long as it's going to last. And for the most part, you know, you have to believe that a majority of the stocks will participate in either the move and the trend on the upside or the downside. Somewhere about 70 to 80% of a stock's move can be attributed to the underlying directionality of a market. So right now, as we are seeing, for the most part, a market that has a tough time staying down for very long, we're seeing the same thing with individual stocks and sectors, of course. If you want to look at something that maybe has less of a... Or is impacted less, I guess we would say, from some of this. I mean, possibly the consumer staples area, maybe to a degree utilities. But these days when we have not only politics that are really pressing a lot of these areas, but we also have, for example, the Fed and interest rates pressuring or helping various sectors. You could say that maybe the consumer staples area could be problematic if we see a change in the direction and trend of the U.S. dollar or the currencies. So I really don't think that there is any one particular area that we can look at and say, well, this sector is immune from the politics. That sector is immune from the Fed. I think you have to really look for, if you are doing this on a fundamental basis, find those stocks that have great management that's able to and consistently execute. Look at earnings growth year after year, quarter after quarter. Look at margin expansion. Look at revenue growth. That's also very high on the priority list these days, especially when we have an environment that people and companies are buying back stocks like crazy. The next question comes from John L. And he says, I don't know if you or Dvorak have talked about this specifically, but if Ed Batowski is correct, isn't the U.S. in and has been for close to a decade in a Great Depression? Is the stock market being used as a propaganda tool to convince dumbed down America that everything is awesome? After all, do investors need to worry about Apple's execution as a business when the Swiss National Bank prints money out of thin air to purchase stock? Your perspective is always appreciated. Where do I even begin with this? John, I think if you are going to be embedded in the idea that there is some greater master that is somehow manipulating the stock market over the last 10 years or 20 years or pick your time period, then you have to ask yourself, wow, why don't I get on the side of that guy? In other words, if there is this great manipulation going on, why aren't you on board? If there is all this money by the Swiss National Bank, there's all this money by the Fed and maybe the Bank of Japan, the Bank of Korea, you know, pick, just keep going down the list. Why aren't you on board? If they have unlimited funds, if this is your thesis, I'm not saying this is correct, but if this is your thesis, why the heck aren't you just hopping on their back instead of trying to fight it? What use would anybody have in trying to fight a central bank or a sovereign wealth fund with essentially unlimited capital? And what are you staying on the sidelines for? What are you afraid of? So again, if that's the thesis, play along. Unless for some reason your personality is not letting you do it for something, some reason. And then really, to be very honest with you, you should stay away from it. Now, let's get down to the nitty-gritty of this. Is there this conspiracy, this propaganda tool that's being used to try to convince everything that everybody's fine? I don't think so. Because it's not just the sovereign wealth funds. It's not just the central banks. It's not simply the hedge funds. I mean, a lot of people are playing along. And who cares what the reason is to a degree? Until a such time that it changes. But it's not changing or hasn't changed. Let's look backwards. Let's not look forward. Let's look backward. And let's say that it hasn't changed all this time and there hasn't been any specific reason to make us fear anything except for a few different corrective modes in the markets and a few different news items that probably were some that were worrisome. And you could probably name let's say a half a dozen per year that you could have said, well, I'm not comfortable now. And you could have theoretically waited till the storm blew over and then put your money back in. But I think you're getting caught up in something that is being used to manipulate you, maybe to buy a newsletter, maybe something else. But I find it to be very disturbing that you're going to base all of your investment and your future on this thesis, that everybody else is wrong besides a few people. And then where's that get you anyway? Now, the other set of questions that came in, I had a few questions come in, as a matter of fact, over the last few weeks with regard to leveraged ETFs. Now, let me make a statement here, and I think it's important to understand that leveraged ETFs, it's kind of like, you know, is it the gun that kills, or is it the person that pulls the trigger that kills? You know, what's the dangerous part of that? Well, what's the dangerous part of a leveraged ETF? So, you know, you think about this for a second. There's so many players out there that, oh, all these leveraged ETFs are terrible. They're bad. Yes, there are some very bad ones that are just historically not created in a way that will allow you to hold on. It doesn't give you a margin for error. So, for example, we look at the VIX ETFs, the singles, the doubles. These things are disastrous. And one of the reasons is it's the nature of how they are structured, what's inside the portfolio itself. And remember something, they're really only supposed to be meant for short-term trading, not multi-day holds. Now, that's the VIX. They're really geared to the short-term VIX. They have a lot of problems with regard to rollover risk. When you're going from the current contract to the next months and the forward contracts, they degrade. Now, there are times it doesn't happen, but generally speaking, these things lose money every time they roll. One of the best shorts probably in history. Now, there are others, though, that are based on equity markets, like the S&P 500, NASDAQ, the Russell. These don't have the same degree of degradation that I've seen. There is a little bit of a hole in some of these, but they're not the same level as what I've seen on the VIX as an example. There are ways in which you can utilize these to hedge a portfolio or even use as a profitable trading tool that's beneficial. But again, not every one of these is structured the same way. You have to understand which are good and which are bad. And not only that, you have to understand that it is all about how you're trading them. If you're using these for a short to midterm, we'll call it hedge or profit center, okay, I'll go along with that. You may be right, you may be wrong on the direction of it, but let's say that you even get it right. In other words, you're perfect on the direction, you're perfect on the timing. Some of these won't keep up with the actual 2x or 3x. They may get you a little less. It depends on a lot of different features of how these things are structured. But they are okay to trade and use as a trading or a hedging tool. But again, for the most part, what happens is that people will take some of these triples or doubles that are not meant to be held for a period of longer than a few days or weeks or whatever the time period is, that really shows that these will hold up well with their appropriate and the benchmark. And what happens is they start losing money and then they never get out of it. So use these things appropriately. Understand what the risk is. Understand what the makeup is of the portfolio that is being used to fund these ETFs. And then go after them when you believe that there is a smart opportunity, like any other investment. One of the things that is going to be coming out and recently was approved is a 4x levered ETF based on the S&P 500. This was just announced last week. This is amazing, a 4x. Now, a lot of times you can get the same or maybe even better leverage out of an option. The only difference is that an option, as I always say, you have to be right twice, at least twice, by the way. You have to be right in timing of it, when it's going to expire, and direction. You also have to be right on the final price. Maybe three things that you have to be right on when it comes to options. So it can be very difficult if you don't get it right. So that's why it pays off so much. That's why the leverage on it and the opportunity is so great when it comes to options. But this 4x levered ETF, we'll have to see what happens. Watch for the symbol UP up for the 4x levered S&P 500 ETF that moves 4x on the upside if the market moves up 4x, you get 4x the amount. If it moves down, you lose 4x the amount. There's also one called Down, D-O-W-N is the symbol. They're not out yet. You can put them on your watch list and wait for them to come out. We'll have to do some studying of this and keep a watch on it into the future to see exactly what happens. If you have any questions, just go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com and look for the Ask Andrew on the top and send it my way. Hopefully we'll get it onto the show on an upcoming episode and we'll talk about that. I want to talk about the big box retailers. Then I want to talk about some Snap and discussion what happened there. Oops. And we're going to talk about some economics, some things that are going on last week and into next week, what we need to be looking at. So let's just get right into some of the recent economics, what's going on during the week that just was, so we can get a little bit of a handle on what we're going to look for next week. Now, in April, well, we talked about retail, and it depends on how you want to look at it, because the pace of retail purchases kind of moved up about 0.4%, but there was some thought that it would be closer to a 0.5% increase from the month before. That was only a 0.1% gain. There was expectation for a lot more overall. Now, headline retail sales were up 4.5% across the 12 months ending in April. Core retail sales rose 0.3% in the fourth month of the year. So there was better numbers, but still, if you take it in its totality, you know, there is something to be said about what people are buying, how they're buying it, and what the consumer's doing. And again, in relation to overall sentiment. Now, inflation did pick up after falling about 0.3% in March. The consumer price index rose about 0.2% last month. There was a 1.1% leap in energy costs that was a major factor overall. Now, this increase left annualized inflation at about 2.2%. I believe it was 2.2%. The core CPI, which you take out food and you take out energy, advanced only 0.1% in April. But we did see a big jump in the wholesale front, the producer price index. You know, that's when you look at the price of goods that are in the manufacturing side of things rather than the finished goods in the CPI or what goes on to the consumer. So before that, you know, the wholesale side saw a move up 0.5% in April and the year over year advanced at 2.5%. But that 0.5% move in April is really concerning. You have to wonder how much of the recent move in the dollar has to do with that and where this is going to play out. If it's just transitory that we're seeing this kind of number, because we are seeing inflation on the wholesale front jump around the world. And if we're seeing this jump around the world, the question is what's going on there and how long is it going to take until it's passed on to the consumer in a big way? I'm not talking about just passing on a little bit. I'm talking about, you know, once you do see a consistent wholesale or PPI number that is rising, it's only a short period of time that follows that we're going to see that it's passed on to the consumer because margins are going to compress otherwise. Now, as I mentioned, also, we did see that overall, we're still at a very high level of consumer sentiment. The University of Michigan came out with a household sentiment reading that rose about 0.7 points in its preliminary May reading from the last month to a total of 97.7. Now, the expectations component, the future component, not the current component, but the future component rose about 1.1 points to a reading of 88.1. Now, again, the S&P 500 was down. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was down. The Dow Jones was down about 0.5%. The S&P was down about 0.35%. And as I mentioned, the NASDAQ was up for the week. What do we have coming up? Let's talk about that. I think this is kind of interesting. On Monday, we have, let's see here. Yeah, just a couple of things. Really not a big and heavy week in terms of economics this week. Dick's Sporting Goods, Home Depot, Jack in the Box, Red Robin, TGX, Urban Outfitters, and Weibo announced earnings on Tuesday. And on Tuesday, we also get the April industrial output, housing starts, and building permits. Now, on Wednesday coming up this week, we have the earnings from still, again, a tremendous amount of retailers. And these are the ones that really have been hit hard. I wonder if we're going to see a little bit of a basing here and if last quarter was a throwing in the towel kind of quarter for some of these retail companies, and if we see some of these have a little bit better numbers than expectations, or even the worst case expectations, then if we'll see some of these really start to run up pretty well. We're going to be seeing American Eagle Outfitters, L Brand, Stein Mart, and Target, and also Cisco with a C. On Thursday, we're going to see the DOL, the Department of Labor's latest initial jobs claims. And by the way, the jobs claims that we saw last week, the continuing job claims, those that are on the current job payrolls are at the lowest since like 1980. So again, you have to ask yourself what's going on with the Fed. The conference board is coming out with their April leading indicators and earnings from Alibaba, Applied Materials, Autodesk, Ross Stores, and Walmart. And then on Friday, earnings announcement from Campbell Soup, Deere, and the Foot Locker. So that's what's going to be coming up next week. I don't know how much detail we should get into with this whole discussion about what's going on at the big box retailers. You know, we've seen that there has been an incredible amount of, I don't know, disdain, or just people are just fed up with going to the malls and what's going on there. I mean, we know the fact that the parking lot deal and parking your car and getting there, it just sucks going to the mall, right? We know that the prices suck at the mall. There's no comparisons available, no ability to quickly shop for something different. There's a lack of size, selection. We know that there's too much overhead these companies are paying. We know that for the most part, I'll talk for myself, that people are more comfortable with no customer service on the front end, finding what they need up front, but having good customer experience on the back end when they have to return something. We know that's going on. Plus, when you go and return something to a big box retailer or some mall, you have to go through the parking again and get a parking spot and get into the mall and fight whatever's going on there and get to the place that you're going there and find the particular area that they hide that you do the returns at, the customer service desk. And this goes on. You know what else I'm talking about? This goes on and on. Do you want to deal with this? Or do you want to simply push a button on the size that you have that you know is the right size and the color that you know they have in stock and get it delivered? And if you don't like whatever it is, it doesn't size right, you don't like it, there's a rip in it, there's a hole, there's a burn, there's a thread hanging, or maybe even it just isn't the right color that you thought it would be, you just push a button and you get a return receipt and the packing slip, and you also get the return mailer that you just slap on an envelope or a box and you send it back. I think the more that we're all getting used to that process, the more we're comfortable with it. Years ago, when I was buying shoes online, people were like, "What is wrong with you?" And I said, "Well, I get 5 or 6 different shoes delivered, different sizes, different widths, different colors. I find the one I like, and then I send the rest back for free. It's easy. They give me the boxes to begin with that stuff was sent in. I don't have to go get my own boxes. Why wouldn't I do this?" Well, we see that I'm not alone in this situation, and I'm obviously not the only one that seems to hate the whole mall experience. I was in a mall last week, and I sent a picture out on Twitter on this because I was in this mall for a charity event. And they roped off part of the beginning area of the mall, the opening area at the front. And they left the lane for people to continue going in that were not involved with this charity event. And I stood there and I looked around. It was packed where I was. I mean, everybody's there for the event and eating the appetizers and drinking and having cocktails and wine and all this. And I look around and I'm thinking, oh, gosh, I haven't been in a mall in a while. And I look out and I see Dillard's right in front of me. I look at it, I'm like, where is everybody? I'm thinking, maybe it's nighttime and it's late. And maybe the mall's closing or something. I don't know. Something's not right. But I look around, I realize, you know what? The problem is nothing more than nobody is shopping in these stores. There's just nobody there anymore. And then it dawned on me, that's the reason why the charity event was being able to be held at the mall, because there's plenty of space to house all these people that are coming in, not fighting the crowds, and probably none of the stores will care less. Last week, I talked about how important it would be to watch for the earnings of these companies to understand a little bit more about what is going on with the current consumer, how they're shopping and how they're consuming. Well, Macy's came out with the earnings, stock down 17%, JCPenney at an all-time low, Kohl's down 10%, Dillard's down 16%, and the carnage goes on and on and on. Is it just Amazon? Is it just Walmart's online process? Is it just these companies have really bad management? No, I don't think so. I think it's a combination. I think, yes, the Amazon effect, the Walmart effect, the online shopping effect, the ability to price shop, whether you use Jet or whatever else it is, and the lack of these companies, these managers able to really go with the times, change their store profile, and the fact that they have such a massive amount of overhead and store capacity is a real problem for them. That's why we talked about many months ago that companies like a Ross Stores or a TJX could do very well, because you're going to see a lot of the materials that are coming off from the seasons that are not being sold by the big box retailers come down the river and be able to get some great deals at Ross Stores. And Ross Stores is doing very and has done very well comparatively. So I think it's really interesting. We'll see this week coming up what happens with some of the other stocks in this area, right? In the area of retail. Not the big box retailers, but now the second tier. We know that some of them have already gone out of business. We've heard announcements this year that several of the smaller retailers are having a lot of problems and struggling. And we see that Amazon is hitting an all-time high. Walmart stock's doing okay. Target's had its share of problems, I'll be honest with you. So they're not really doing well either. There's a different mentality of how you buy things these days. And that is a big component to what is going on with the malls. We still have to worry about the real estate deals, that the REITs and some of the ones that are the mall properties that hold a lot of these in there, because you have to wonder with all the store closures that are going to be going on, how much is going to hurt some of these REITs that did not have in their contracts with these retailers that they will pay either way. And don't let some of these retailers fool you, because when they still close stores, really what's happening there is they probably still have to pay the rent on many of these for an extended period of time unless they unwind them and cut a deal with the tenant and the landlord. But really what they're doing there is they're slowing down even more in terms of sales. They have less stores out there. And on top of that, they're actually firing people. So there's a lot more retail jobs available, it seems, or not available, but retail employees that are available to fill jobs. Well, let's talk about Snap, another disaster of the week. This is the company called Snapchat. Snap got snapped. I mean, it got whacked. It got skewered. It got roasted, toasted. It got just absolutely smacked down when it came after with their earnings. Now, you know that I am not a fan of this company. I like their product. It's fun. As a matter of fact, I was doing some Snapchat all weekend. However, when it comes to a company that I put my money into for an elongated period of time that would have some fundamental characteristics of what I would want to invest in, it didn't at all pass the smell test. Again, it's a great and fun idea. It really is. And yes, they're making some money. But what is this that's unique? Okay, you can make, put pig ears on yourself and send it off with a quick little, typing of where you are and a location tag and maybe some text on there. That's fun. But what about the ability to grow revenue over time? The problem is they set this thing up like it's going to be the next Facebook, when in fact, it's not going to be the next Facebook. It's not even the next Twitter, for that matter, for good or bad on what you think Twitter is all about. Because it's an app only. And not only that, and probably more importantly, it's easily copied. The technology is and has been already by Facebook and Instagram. It's easy to copy this technology, and all it is basically a here and now fun application. And big question I have is they don't have a website, so there's no advertising there. The difference between Snapchat and Twitter, Twitter has memory. You put up a tweet and it can be viewed over time, and maybe people want to search and check out your tweets over time, and you're going to run through advertising in that whether you're on the website or you're on the app. You're going to get, as you're scrolling, a variety of different advertisements. You can go forever on Snapchat and never get an advertisement if you're just dealing with your friends in a certain group of people. So they're missing out on all that. And sure, there are those corporations that are trying to figure out a way to use Snapchat, whether it's through the filters or whether it's through the stories. And Snapchat is desperately trying to figure out another way to make money as well. But I just don't see that this is going to be a revenue model that could be expanded in a way that really creates a valuation like we saw. Now, the stock opened up, I think it was at $17 after the IPO, went up to $29, kind of came around $20 for a while, stuck around there. A few people came out with, oh, they love the stock, and the stock went back to about $23, $24. Earnings come out. They missed their number. The revenues were bad. And one of the big problems here, why they were hurt so badly, about 20% on the downside after their earnings report was out, was that the problem was that usually when companies, especially in the go-go technology area, come out with their first ever earnings report after the IPO, the first time that they are actually a publicly traded company, you would think that they're probably on their best behavior. They're doing great. This is why they IPO'd. They got more money in to expand and really expand the revenue base. They stack it in their favor to make sure that this is happening. And what happened here, that didn't happen. And they were not meeting the levels of growth even right out of the gate. So all of a sudden, money evaporated. And there was a reality that struck. And the realization that, oh, wait a second. Maybe this isn't all that it cracked up to be. Maybe this isn't going to be a Facebook. Maybe, even though it may take some time, maybe there's a lot more to really be discovered here and analyzed before we really put this massive multi-billion dollar valuation on this. Now, the stock was clearly priced for perfection after the IPO. We talked about this several times on this show and also on DH Unplugged. I tweeted on it also. You can follow me at Andrew Horowitz. That's the Twitter handle. One word, Andrew Horowitz. Is just search for that on Twitter. You'll find me. But basically, the stock was hacksawed. And I think that while you have some downside protection, probably close to the 17 and a half level, and it did pop on Friday after Mark Cuban made some kind comments about the stock, you're probably going to run into some resistance at about the, I would say, the 1975 to about the 2025 level. So anywhere about, we'll call it, let's just make it easy, about the $20 level. That's where you're going to have some resistance that you're running into here. And once you have that, I'm not sure what the momentum is going to be following that if we're not in a crazy just buy anything mode at that point. And we could see short sellers step in again and possibly start rocking the stock until we see a little bit more confirmation that the managers of this company can figure out a way, because nobody wants to be in that Twitter trap again. This hope that, oh, one day they're going to have this revenue and this growth and they're going to have all these users and all, and we're going to have just a continuation of expansion of the revenue and earnings over time at a, 25%, 30% clip. If you don't have that, at least that, or in this case, it should probably be 100% clip at the valuation that they're looking at right now. So I think there's something that, be careful with this is my bottom line. Now, I mentioned at the top of the program, the banger pattern. I wrote on triggercharts.com this week about this. Essentially, what this is a pattern where we look for overbought, a technical pattern, where we look for overbought, severely overbought technical conditions on, let's say, it could be maybe a 60-minute, even a daily time frame. But the intraday time frames are probably a lot better to look at when it comes to this, because you want to find where there is a level of, I would say, a point where there's so much selling going on, it's almost a capitulation point. And when you find these capitulation points, you want to find something else. You want to find where the very solid support is. Now, as many of you know, we have indicators that we build based on a lot of this and these algorithms that we have on support and resistance, things called points of control, unfair high, unfair lows, that are based on what's called market profile. We look at volume-based levels and price and come up with where the buying and the selling is happening. Now, what's really cool is, I haven't flushed this out entirely, but I know that there's a really sweet deal that TradeStation has that you can pretty much get free platform and very cheap trading. So if you are a trader, you could check this out. Go over to triggercharts.com and look at this article that I wrote, whether you use TradeStation or not. I wrote this article to give you an idea of what to look for and how to get very intermediate term bouncing and breakdown opportunities that are short term but are tradable. I call it the banger pattern, because it bangs down, it's on an overbought or oversold level, and it's at support, but it's also on a major level that we're seeing that there's a capitulation. And more often than not, the next thing you get is a bounce. Now, that could be a bounce down or a bounce up, but take a look at the charts that I put up there. Let's go to triggercharts.com, click on the journal, and there's a nice little story there that talks about how we find this. Now, if you could identify this on a chart, and you have to use some support resistance lines or use the altimeter and the aileron, which gives you some of this. But you could use things like the MACD or stochastics for your overbought, oversold. You could also look for some market profile if you don't have TradeStation, or build in your own long-term support and resistance lines and try to match this up and create it yourself. And I think you'll have some interesting opportunities there. Now, next week, I mentioned we're going to have Kevin Hoffman on, and we're going to be talking about the Robo ripoff. Kind of get a few things off of my mind about what's going on in the area of robo advising and how the public really is being, I think, swindled, and where there is opportunity for you on something that I think is we took about a year to build this. After many years of building other things on top, you know, this is kind of an on top of. We'll talk about that next week and have some other great guests coming up. Check out all the things that we have over on The Disciplined Investor. Listen to DH Unplugged every Tuesday night or forward from there. Check out DH Unplugged for the Close to the Pin competition that we have, the weekly stock picks, as well as the Millennials versus the Old Codgers portfolio. And I'll tell you something right now. One of those guys is beating the other pretty badly. We implemented this back in May last year. So we're about a whole year now. And I got to tell you, surprisingly, one of those is beating the other's portfolio very impressively. Check it out over on DH Unplugged. Thanks for joining me. I hope you had a great week and a happy Mother's Day to all of you that are mothers or celebrating. Thank you so much. I hope you enjoy your weekend and hope you had a great time. I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.